Eamon Brennan joins us to talk about this Sweet 16 that's whittling itself down, obviously, to an Elite Eight. College basketball writer for ESPN. He's in San Jose, where at least a couple of those games will be played. Eamon, what's going on?
What's going on, fellas? I mean, I'm hungry now, too, just listening to that last few seconds before I hopped on here. And I really appreciate that. I haven't eaten yet. So,
Well, hopefully hopefully the media meals that are at least decent down there in old San Jose.
No comment.
I love it. We were debating this back and forth for a good portion of the show today. Xavier's an 11 seed, but they have some high-quality college basketball history. Is there a Cinderella left in this tournament?
I don't think so. I mean, I think they're probably the closest thing. And I wrote last night that, it's a program, but it's been to a bunch of Sweet 16s in the last 7-8 years that expects to be there every year. It's a team that, this group of players was, a lot of them were part of a team that was the number 2 seed last year and that entered this season, ranked 7th in the AP preseason poll. So they expect to be good, and their seed was, it wasn't a mistake in the way that Wisconsin at an 8 seed or Wichita State at a 10 seed was a mistake by the committee. It was pretty accurate reflection of their season and particularly how they struggled down the stretch. But those struggles were also a part of, figuring out injuries and inopportune sort of the moment you're really supposed to be peaking as a team in February. You lose your starting point guard. Your best player, Trayvon Blewett, misses 3 games and he's banged up. And things really, went on a slide. Even without that, they weren't the a top 10 team this season beforehand. But there's no expectation, let's say, from them that this is anything other than what they should be doing. They're not just saying that the way, a team like Florida Gulf Coast will say, oh, we can beat anybody. But deep down in their heart of hearts, they know that they're the Cinderella and that this is all very unexpected. That's not the attitude that Xavier has as a program, and for good reason. They expect to be good every year.
I mean, I'm curious. We were going back and forth with this whole Cinderella thing today. South Carolina, they're obviously a 7th seed. I'm curious, though, what have you seen through these guys throughout the entire course of the season, but more importantly, this NCAA run that they're on?
Well, I mean, the number one thing to know about South Carolina, and it has been all year, has been on the defensive end. I mean, they really get after it defensively, and with the possible exception of Gonzaga, I think you could argue that they're the best defensive team in the country. And so that's a baseline. The issues that they had throughout the year and kind of why they ended up seated where they were came on the offensive end. Beyond Cindarius Thornwell, they just did not score the ball at various points throughout the year. And they played pretty up-tempo, and they got up and down and tried to really sort of out-muscle, but skill-wise on the offensive end, things weren't there. And then when their defense did slip, and then they had a few slips late in the SEC campaign, they were capable of losing to just about anybody anywhere, including at home teams like Alabama. When they weren't getting the stops at their usual rate, they were very vulnerable. But in the tournament, particularly against Duke, being able to shut down Duke on the offensive end, you can then exploit their vulnerabilities defensively. And again, South Carolina has sort of been preparing for this all moment by using their defense to transition and get easy points and not have to really work hard in the half court where, again, with the exception of Cindarius Thornwell, who's an extremely skilled, high volume scorer, they just don't really have that, those options on the offensive end. So it's always scrappy for them on the offensive end. It's always sort of trying to take advantage of being out in front of the rest of the defense. But when the other team has the ball, man, that they are as good as any team in the country.
Eamon Brennan of ESPN joins us on our IM Flash hotline to talk a little college basketball and, of course, the NCAA tournament right now. Last night from West Virginia, we saw one of the worst final possessions that I can remember in college basketball. Arizona saw a frustrating final sequence with Alonzo Trier. Is there a simple fix for things like this? Do these teams need to stop with the hero ball, or is it much bigger than that?
I think that's probably part of it. I mean, I think, look, like West Virginia, that possession stuck out, and rightfully so, because they didn't get a shot off at the very end before the buzzer sounded. And that's the worst case scenario for any possession, let alone one on which your season sort of hangs in the balance. But they really struggled on the offensive end all night long. And I think the primary reason was Gonzaga. You know, West Virginia is and hasn't been, you know, an elite offensive team, but their combination of Javon Carter and their interior rebounding. And I mean, they've put up some quality offensive performances all year long. And Gonzaga is so good on that end of the floor and so adaptable and deep, and foul trouble doesn't really hurt them because they've got so many guys to bring off the bench. I thought that was the primary contributor. On the other end, with Arizona, Xavier Zone really gave them some fits, particularly in big moments, because they've adjusted down the end of their season here, that they're providing new looks to teams between possessions. Sometimes within possessions, they'll switch from 2-3 to 1-3-1 and vice versa. And so you don't really know where to go with the ball. There isn't that sort of standard protocol the way, you know, if you're playing a 2-3, okay, you flash to the high post, you get to the short corner, you dive under the rim, you spread it out, try and get corner threes, that sort of stuff. That's just not there against them right now. I think it also hurt that Alonzo Trier had stretches, you know, in the last 5-6 minutes of the second half, and maybe a little bit earlier than that as well, where he really did take over the game. And Hero Ball was working out pretty well, and then they get down to the stretch, and the shot stopped falling, and he had one rim out, you know, that's really all it took for Xavier to get back in the game. I do think, in general, in basketball, that sort of tendency, like one guy needs to hold the ball and get the shot down the stretch, that's how it works ever since Michael Jordan. I feel like that's kind of been going away stylistically, but it's always going to be there. And even for coaches, the temptation to just put the ball in the hands of your best player and hope they can make something work is strong compared to running a normal set and trying to get a good shot. It's really easy to fall back into that when the game is really tight and pressurized late.
I think it's fair to say Kansas are the best-looking team right now, given the fact they've beaten everyone in their path by 20 or so points. I mean, granted, UC Davis, Michigan State, and Purdue, they haven't had the hardest road to the Elite Eight, but is there anyone that you see that can really give Kansas a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, I think whichever team ultimately comes out of the South region, I think that's kind of a bracket of death with all four top seeds, and obviously UNC and Butler are playing at the moment, but you know, Kentucky and UCLA, the winner of that is going to give Carolina a really tough game, if not win, and then the winner of either of those, I think, is, you know, matches up with Kansas pretty well across the board, and in some cases will have some advantages. So I think the bracket did shape up pretty nicely for Kansas in the end, at least thus far, and Purdue turned out to be not as maybe as good of a or as dangerous a matchup for them as folks would have thought, given Purdue's front court and Kansas's struggles in that area throughout most of the year. But I think, yeah, I would agree with you that the Jayhawks have looked really good. But, you know, they get to the Final Four and they get to the national title game. There will be teams there most likely, unless something crazy happens here tomorrow with Gonzaga, Xavier, and who knows at this point. But any of those teams, the Gonzaga, UNC, UCLA, UK, all of those teams, I think, are a pick'em with Kansas, if not, you know, depending on the matchups, maybe is a slight favorite.
So Kansas play Oregon next up. Oregon lost Chris Boucher right before the tournament, which was awfully unfortunate. How have the Ducks been able to make it this far? They've kind of scratched their way through a few wins. Guys have been stepping up that didn't really do that throughout the course of the season. How do you see them, I guess, matching up with Kansas?
I think they match up relatively well, particularly given their size at the guard spots. That's the kind of thing that can maybe give Frank Mason, Devontae Graham some issues on the defensive end. When you've got a guy like Dylan Brooks who can, you know, play anywhere from a 4 to a 1 and can match up on the defensive end, and you don't really have to worry about him getting beat off the dribble, but he can also switch down and guard a guy like Josh Jackson or maybe even Carlton Bragg if he needs to, depending on Coach Self's lineups. That's part of it. I think, you know, the big sort of overlooked thing, because Chris Boucher was probably the best shot blocker in the country, or at least one of them, and a big, big part of the reason why Oregon was the best sort of rim protection team in the country all year, is that the guy playing next to him, Jordan Bell, is awfully good at blocking shots and protecting the rim too, and is probably, you know, just as flexible in terms of being able to go out on the wing, can create steals, can be really disruptive. So losing Boucher was obviously a huge deal, but having Jordan Bell, sort of an unsung glue guy on the defensive end for them, is big, and it's still a very talented team. So I think they match up okay with Kansas. I think obviously we would give Kansas the nod and the advantage, particularly given their guard play, but it'll be an interesting one for sure.
The Pac-12 conference was somewhat maligned this year for being top-heavy, and obviously they've still got some teams active in this thing and are hoping to keep UCLA rolling through, Oregon already through. Does it say anything about a conference when we're this far into the tournament when they have multiple representatives?
No. I don't think so. I think that it's a small sample size, right? Like, we have all of this information about all of these games throughout the entire year. We have pretty good ways of evaluating teams these days in terms of, you know, advanced metrics and getting into the math and watching a ton of tape and seeing how everybody matches up. And we can kind of, and I think generally arguing about conferences is tough because there's always a moving target. Is it top to bottom strength, or is it, you know, the raw number of good teams or the raw number of title contenders or whatever? And people tend to value different things, but generally speaking, things are crazy in the NCAA tournament, and, you know, sort of trying to draw patterns out of, you know, what ends up happening and how many teams of what league are in the Sweet 16 or the Elite Eight, to me is probably a little foolhardy. I think a great example is, look, the ACC last year, probably not as good as the ACC this year over the course of the season, but that ACC last year had six teams in the Sweet 16. This one had two, one. So it's a different sort of thing, and it's fun to argue about, and people talk about it all the time this time of year, and it's fun on Twitter when Duke loses, and people who are fans of, you know, Big East teams or whatever are posting funny GIFs of you know, the ACC exploding or whatever. Like, I enjoy it as much as the next person, but I don't think it really matters all that much, or is that telling one way or the other.
Before we let you go, Eamon, UCLA or Kentucky?
Kentucky. I pick Kentucky. I think it'll be a 2-point, 3-point game, so that you might as well flip a coin on that prediction, but I think Kentucky will find a way.
Eamon Brennan of ESPN, give him a follow on Twitter. We'll talk with you before the end of this tournament. Thanks, Eamon.
Sounds good. Enjoy, guys. Take care.